Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Hola, waka, chokma, all across the tundra. I'm also shouting out to the Yukon and the coast. Grady Deaton here, coffee at KYUK. It's Monday morning, and as usual, for every day, I'm excited and sharing my excitement with you. I do have my coffee on my sideboard, ready to face the day and rest it up from the weekend. I'm a little bit nervous. I get nervous sometimes, folks. You know, when I have important people on, I get a little nervous. And this morning, I want to introduce you this morning. It is Sexual Abuse Month, and we've been discussing those issues a lot because our region has one of the highest rates of sexual abuse and rape in the state. So joining us this morning for Coffee at KYUK, I have Representative Garen Tarr from Anchorage. Welcome to the show. Oh, and turn your radio down, please.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. It's really a delight to join you this morning for coffee.
Yes, I thank you for being with us this nice and bright day. It is bright on my neck of the woods. How's it on your side?
It's a beautiful Monday morning here, so I'm glad we're sharing that same experience.
Now, I guess we do need to shift gears because I understand that you have introduced House Bill 5, which is aiming to change some of the laws concerning rape and sexual abuse in Alaska and the processing of those crimes. What is the problem that this bill is designed to address?
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, especially during Sexual Assault Awareness Month, to talk about this and in your introductory comments, making note of the problem that is our shared community problem as Alaskans that we need to address. And it was brought to my attention from the organization Standing Together Against Rape that our current statute that does not define consent but defines without consent is broken, it's outdated and incomplete, and as a result, it means that we are not prosecuting sexual assaults effectively in Alaska. It's why only 1 in 10 sexual assaults in Alaska is prosecuted. One of the reasons why. And we've been working on this for a couple of years. We have worked with hundreds of Alaskans through this process, and it's really important to me that I share what we learned when we asked people, young and old, from every region of the state and all different backgrounds, has consent ever been an issue in your life? Each person said yes. And it really told me the extent of the problem. And so this is so much more than just updating a law and prosecuting crimes. That's the part where we remove someone who's committing harm from the community. But that means that harm has already happened. That means an Alaskan's already been harmed. And depending on the person, the impact can be very long-term. And recovery can be very difficult, and some don't achieve that. Mm. But then also the opportunity to change the culture and educate our young people around healthy sexual interactions and what consent means. And we've been working with some folks that work with youth athletes throughout the state, for example, and they're really excited about the opportunity to teach young people about consent and what we think of consent in 2021, what we think of it today. This law is over 40 years old, and we have a different idea today, and the law needs to reflect that.
Well, Garen, let me take a step back for a second, and let's just set the stage a bit to get a bit of context. I understand statistics aren't that good when it comes to prosecuting sexual abuse and rape in Alaska, and they indicate that in 2015, about 90% of the reported felony-level sex offenses did not result in convictions. How does that compare to the rate of convictions in other states so that we're not just being alarmist with the numbers?
Well, it's lower than in other states, and it's interesting. We were just looking at what other states have done in this area, and we have without consent in Alaska statute. We aren't the only state that had a statute like that or still has a statute like that. And one of the problems with it is it suggests there needs to be use of force or coercion and that doesn't fully capture all of the circumstances in which a sexual assault takes place. And so categorically, it doesn't include some sexual assault, just by nature of the definition. And that's a really big problem. We were just looking at the story in Montana, very fascinating. They had a similar statute that they changed in 2017 to be similar to what we're doing now. And the same problem, when you read the news articles from that time, the reason they wanted to change their statute was it was set up in the same way to suggest force or coercion needed to be used. And what we talk a lot about now is in the trauma response, we know that there's the fight, there's the flight, but there's also the freeze. Mm. And that freeze element is not captured by these statutes that require use of force or coercion. And again, what it means is a whole section, sort of, right? A whole category of these crimes can't be considered because, from the prosecutor's point of view, they have to be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury, that this crime took place. And the law is written in this way that puts much too high of a burden of proof to really capture it.
So I guess you've covered why it's hard to prosecute these cases in Alaska because of the standard definition and those legal standards that prosecutors have to meet when presenting cases. Let's punctuate this change now. Explore the difference for me between no means no framework versus yes means yes framework, and how would that shift the burden of proof between the victim and the accused in court?
Thank you, and that's a really great way to characterize it. And one of the challenges is that we've situated it that no means no, but we have a law that says no means no, sort of, was there coercion or force? Because no means no is not good enough. And so that's the problematic statute. Now moving to the yes means yes, it's a real shift in thinking. A lot of this has come about through the Me Too movement and, you know, this sort of paradigm shift in the way we're thinking about it. What we know to be consent, what we expect to be consent, sort of the cultural and societal norms around these behaviors have changed. And so what you see being taught now, for example, the high school students, college students, young adults, and different sexuality education programs is an acronym called FRIES, which means freely given, reversible, informed, enthusiastic, specific. And the freely given part is the yes means yes. And so the idea is, you know, instead of sort of in this sexual encounter, you know, one person is less of an active participant, except in this sort of defend themselves kind of way, you know, no means no. You know, it's, again, beyond just the criminalization of the behaviors, it's the empowerment of each person to be an active participant in the act that's happening. And so the way we define it, that it's a freely given reversible agreement, you know, that part is really important. And then we further define that, you know, freely given means, you know, with words or actions, positive cooperation in the act. And so trying to really situate that so that now, you know, it's more of a situation of two people deciding, yes, they want to do something, rather than, you know, sort of one person is just supposed to, like, not be an active participant and instead just only participate by saying no. But it's a real shift.
But it also begs, you know, it begs the question about the issue of alcohol and rape cases because, mm-hmm. you know, consent is obviously something that can be impaired, or at least you know what I'm saying. What does being drunk mean legally, not just for the victim but the accused? Anyone who is drunk too much can understand that their judgment's impaired, regardless of who's drinking, or as is often the case when both people involved have been drinking. How does your bill deal with that, and how would your bill change the legal issues in an assault that occurred under the influence of alcohol?
Thank you for those questions, and this is something that was discussed quite a bit in the committee, actually. And, you know, sort of, you know, what you have to think about is right now, this is already a big issue in sexual assault cases. And, you know, what we have right now in sexual assault too is statutes that specifically deal with mentally incapable or incapacitated. And so it specifically, you know, has sexual assault too as a crime in which, you know, both consent was in question and, you know, that the, that applied to the victim of that crime. So that part is very consistent with what we have in the statute right now. And, you know, what we've talked a lot about is there are sort of questions, if you will, or sort of a little bit of unknowns about how this change happens and then works through the court system. But that's not unlike any other change in the law. And what I've, you know, talked with many, many prosecutors who've been helping us through this two-year process that we've been working on this bill, and it comes down to not having absolute certainty on a couple of these points isn't a reason to not try and move forward and improve the law, and that it's just expected that some of this will be worked out through the process as it always is worked out through the process. And that, you know, in my experience has been very consistent with some of the other changes we've made in laws, and just kind of the conversations around that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's just been sort of, the outcome has been, you know, don't let that be a reason to not move forward. We know this law is broken and needs to be improved. And specifically removing these elements, just like I mentioned as the Montana example about coercion and force, that in itself is a huge improvement. And again, will, you know, allow the definition to capture a lot more of the assaults that are happening.
Okay, so for those of us who get a little bit dizzy in the details, let's bullet out how you feel or in which ways House Bill 5 will make it easier to successfully pursue rape and assault cases in court. If you can just bullet those for me.
Sure. There's the few really important specific examples are the use of force, removing that provision. That will be important. The coercion provision, and those elements will be included, but it won't be required to be considered a sexual assault. And it's a really interesting thing, not to get too into the weeds, but again, it reflects sort of how our thinking has evolved, is that what some states are doing, and including the federal government, is having a sexual assault, you know, a rape that happens with force, be a higher level of crime than a rape that happens with coercion.
Oh, right.
So the element of force, you know, or a weapon or something being being considered, you know, a higher level of crime. But the underlying piece to both of those is whether there was consent or not. So, you know, having a more effective definition of consent, that's sort of the step one of that. And then applying these other factors, was there force or coercion or fraud used, would, you know, come after that. So, you know, that's one way that this might change and address that. And rape by fraud is a new provision that's being specifically included. And there are some just really tragic stories we've learned of Alaskans who've been harmed by an individual who pretends to be somebody else. And so the person who was victimized, agrees to sexual contact or sexual penetration because they think it's someone else. Situations like an individual lives with their boyfriend, and the brother gets in bed with the girlfriend pretending to be the boyfriend.
Are there provisions in House Bill 5 for that?
Yes. So we add a specific rape by fraud provision because we know there's examples of this, and they're not the most frequent, but we know of them, and there are, you know, handful more of these examples that are upsetting that I could share.
Sure.
But right now, the law doesn't have a provision to address those. So in those circumstances, because consent wasn't in question because the person pretended to be someone else, and so the individual consented with the understanding that they were consenting to a sexual act with someone else. So right now there's no provision to capture that. And so for the individuals who've been harmed like that. They cannot seek justice.
Well, Garen, we're not going to have time to get into some of the more personal ways that this issue has motivated you, but while we're on the subject of provisions of the bill, journalists have covered the lag in processing sexual assault examination kits or rape kits, and how does your bill address that specifically, and why is that important?
We have been working on this for a number of years, and the process was taking 2 years or more when we first started, and so that was really difficult on survivors to be having to wait that long, and in part because of the lag in the actual court case, those were kind of syncing up with each other, but there's sort of two different experiences happening there. So the person, the survivor, would like to know, you know, if, especially if it's an unknown person, you know, what can be captured by processing that rape kit. That's a little bit different than what they might need for the evidence, and they might need that, not need that until a little bit later. So what we've done is work to shorten the time frame and try to help the survivors with that, you know, evolution for them and their healing, and we're working to get that down to 6 months in this bill.
So I only have 30 seconds for you to answer this last bit. What is your hope for the bill? How assured are you of its passage, and what are the hurdles in so brief a time?
We're getting short on time is our biggest hurdle, but I am going to work as hard as I can. I think this might be the most important piece of legislation I've worked on, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity this morning to join you and share about House Bill 5. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I wish we could talk more about it. Thank you, Representative Tarr, for joining us here on Coffee at KYUK. Representative Tarr has introduced House Bill 5, which will change, or hopefully will change, the law concerning sex abuse and rape, making it easier to gain convictions of reported felony-level sex offenses. Tomorrow on Coffee at KYUK, we'll have a discussion of the recent outbreak of rabies in the YK Delta and what can be done to protect your communities. That leaves me just one thing left to say to listeners, and that's don't forget the most important thing, and that's to be awesome to each other.
Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.